Thanks for tuning in to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood. Since 2015, Dr. Youngblood has taken scores of questions and comments on the challenging issues of the day with a goal of informing and motivating listeners to examine the issues from a central biblicist worldview. Currently, this broadcast is heard on 5 regional stations, as well as 4 additional stations in Virginia. There's now a great opportunity to expand this vital ministry to other cities. We sincerely need your help to accomplish this mission. Your support of any amount is needed to take this next step in sharing God's truth in a relevant, lively, and timely way. Thanks for your willingness to support us in this broadcast as we prepare to face the issues on a broader scale.
Go to fcbcatjax.com and click the donate button, or send your best gift to First Conservative Baptist Church, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida, 32258. Attention radio. Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood is brought to you by First Conservative Baptist Church. Now let's get back to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood. And ladies and gentlemen, due to a family emergency, the second half of the Let's Face the Issues broadcast with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood will need to be a pre-recorded message that we played earlier. The family encourages your prayers at this time.
Thank you so much, ladies and gentlemen, for hanging in there. We're going to continue our interview today. It's a pre-recorded interview, so we cannot take any calls. But it's an interview with Dr. David E. Martin. Dr. Martin is renowned on a global basis. He is knowledgeable on the COVID-19 vaccinations, and all of the scientists and all of those that are involved in the conspiracy, not as we look at it as something that's fake, but that which is taking place. He says that it is not a virus, it is not a pandemic, but is planned. So continue to listen to this today. I pray that it's a blessing to you and that you will be encouraged and challenged with the information that you hear on this interview.
The goal here is to inoculate every global citizen, is it not?
Oh, yeah, but where does it start? It's always started with our military. And if I'm a hostile foreign actor, whether that is a foreign entity or whether that is a industrial complex, I don't even care. If I know that the first place I'm going to force injections is in every member of the armed services, it would make great sense to upload a toxin gene sequence into the injection.
Well, while we're on the off the beaten Dr. David Martin path.
Yeah.
Let's step out. Let's just stay out of the factual realm for a second and continue hypothesis.
Yep.
The entire program has been a bioweapon program to inject the Chinese-sourced computer-simulated pathogen into a global population under the guise of a pandemic, which is something that you have been reporting on for 20 months. Yep. You have sent this to the DOJ. You have sent this to law enforcement agencies. You have testified to this in front of Congress.
Yep.
All of it has gone nowhere.
Yep.
Because these people have been ordered. So, again, how do you see us stopping it? Of course,
well, I think, Stu, the reason for my obsession, and this is kind of bridging back to my normal shtick, the reason for my obsession with having conversations like the one I'm having with you is at some point enough of the public will hear this where someone is golfing with a U.S. attorney. You know, somebody on your show knows a U.S. attorney. Somebody on, I don't know, Reiner Fulmich's video feed knows a U.S. attorney, knows somebody. I had the good fortune of making a presentation down in Austin, Texas, and I had the good fortune of having one of the Supreme Court justices from the Supreme Court in Texas in the room when I happened to do one of my presentations. Thankfully, he has the ability to, you know, point people in the right direction. Now, as a Supreme Court justice, he is not capable of doing a thing, but he is capable of actually saying, hey, have a look at this. What we are doing, and the reason why I have been so passionate to be as vocal as I have been, is because at some point, somebody is actually going to land this in front of a person who goes, I'm drawing a line under this and I'm not going to tolerate it anymore. The problem we've had is that we have a public that is incensed because this information is tantamount to the serial killer who leaves a talisman behind at every murder scene, right? These perpetrators are actually admitting to their crimes and laughing full in the face of a public who cannot do anything because the courts refuse and the Justice Department refuse to take the action that is required when a crime is being committed.
The suicide rate is going to be outrageous.
Once people understand that countless physicians have been willfully participating in the homicide of humanity, I cannot imagine what it would be like to live with that.
What about just the people who have been inoculated as well? I mean, what future do they have? Is there an antidote for this thing? Who holds the antidote? Did the serial killers who are admitting to their crime and laughing in our faces, did they also have a cure for this? Or was the cure just to not take it themselves?
If you look at the history of the mRNA technology, the history isn't good. The pathogenic priming that happens with mRNA technology in previous experiments has suggested that the prognosis is in fact quite dire. Ironically, there are a number of treatments that can be considered, but what we do not know, and this is where it becomes problematic to have a manipulated chimeric synthetic mRNA strand, which we know is not derived from a pathogen. It is derived from a computer simulation. We do not know the long effect of where this thing is going to go. So the bad news, Stu, is that there will be consequences that could not have been anticipated because we didn't have this kind of synthetic chimeric alteration in the historical trials. What we had was mRNA strands that were directly derived from pathogens. This one, the spike protein that's in the Pfizer and Moderna injection, this one is a whole new ballgame. And so we actually can't answer the question, is there hope for the people who have taken the injection, simply because the information is not knowable. And it's not knowable because neither Pfizer nor Moderna had an independent investigational review board to review any of this content. So this is actually the fox guarding the hen house. And we don't have any way of accessing information that actually validates that a risk-benefit analysis included the long-term consequence of what happens in the post-injection health of people who receive the injection. We don't know.
It boggles my mind that people are tripping over themselves, have been for months, to go get a needle stuck into them for something where the inserts are left intentionally blank. We know nothing about this thing whatsoever.
Yep.
That's because it's intentionally being hidden. I mean, your bottle of Advil has more warnings on it. I mean, that thing folds out to almost a kite size inside of these things that are for a headache.
Yeah.
This is something that's going into your blood, injected with a needle out of a syringe.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. If you look at the kind of the unpack this thing a little bit, what has been done is we've chosen the cunning use of the term vaccine, despite the fact that vaccine as a defined term, you know, even the patent office had to school Anthony Fauci, as I put in the Fauci dossier, on what a vaccine is, because Anthony Fauci was in fact trying to get a vaccine that wasn't one. And fact checkers hate when I say this, but there's in fact a legal standard for what a vaccine is. And there's also an FDA standard for what a vaccine is. And this is neither. The fact of the matter is, in the case of the Moderna and the Pfizer shot, this is injecting a stimulant to produce a toxin for the secondary benefit, you hope, of building an immune response to the toxin your body is producing. But listen to what I just said, because it's technically, unfortunately, correct. You're not getting a pathogen that your body is responding to with an immune response. You're getting the instructions for your cells to create the pathogen, and then you hope that your body, in response to the pathogen you were told to create, you hope your body comes up with an immune response. But here's the tiny problem. The clinical trials did not measure immune response. They did not measure infection response, and they did not measure transmission response. So every public health benefit that vaccines purport to have was never measured in these trials.
Is this why the magnetism is happening? I mean, the CDC says, no, these shots won't make you magnetic. Do you have any idea if it is these shots making people magnetic?
Well, the magnetism thing has some fairly interesting arguments around some of the ferritin adjuvants and components that have gone into certain ones of the injections. The degree to which those things are verifiable based on the contents of the vaccine would require us to have transparency on what's in the vaccine. And that's where I've tried to avoid jumping into that particular conversation, because I can't comment on what I am unable to know. I am unable to know what is actually going into these shots because it's not transparent.
You've seen the reports on the graphene
oxide, all that stuff,
but you don't know firsthand. I respect that. That's of course, very responsible. So what about the transmission part of it? You know, from the injected to the uninjected, this shedding, I guess, is an inappropriate word because that's what viruses do. This is not a virus. This is the self-spreading vaccine stuff has been talked about publicly since, I think I found an article as old as 2008. They were trying to develop these self-spreading vaccines. There are reports, obviously, of, the stopping of bleeding, prolonged periods, menopausal women starting to bleed again, infertility, sterile men, headaches, hangover type symptoms. The list goes on and on.
Yep.
Obviously, people uninjected, around injected people are being affected. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah. So once again, the mechanism of action is a challenge when you don't know what the actual components are in the injection. So what we do know is that there has been well-established concern, not only for the transmission of whatever the residue, if you will, the residue of this manufacturing of a spike protein by a human, right? We are not supposed to, just to be clear, let's set the record straight. Humans are not supposed to make spike proteins. That was not part of the divine order that went into a genome of humanity. We were not encoded to make spike proteins. And the problem is we don't know whether or not what is actually happening is that we're creating a second level pathogen, which is whatever is being expressed. That could be a biologic, that could be a protein fragment, that could be all sorts of other things. But what we do know is that the risk of secondary transmission of clinical symptoms is something that has been known about and documented significantly since the early 2000s. So we do know that there is a secondary effect on the healthy population that is not getting injected. And that documented evidence is critical enough that it was one of the things included for monitoring inside of the clinical trials for these particular injections. Now, the bad news is it wasn't monitored. But that doesn't mean that it wasn't put in to what Pfizer was told to monitor during the clinical trial. So we know that there was a known risk. We know that the risk was identified as something that should be monitored. And we know it wasn't monitored.
Who are the people that the words that you used is the DOJ, the law enforcement, is they've been ordered not to do anything with this. Who's making these orders?
Well, so the Department of Justice under the Attorney General has, unfortunately, what's called prosecutorial discretion. I had the very bad fortune of spending a lot of time with the DOJ's antitrust division in the early 2000s. And it was fascinating that I had the opportunity, quite unfortunately, to have one of the senior DOJ members send me a note on their personal email account, not on the DOJ email account, saying that while I had established that a crime had been committed, it didn't rise to the level of prosecutorial discretion. I want you to just listen to what I just said. An official at the DOJ said, you've established, and this, by the way, is a multi-billion-dollar crime. So, this wasn't taking a candy bar from a convenience store. This was a multi-billion-dollar crime. And the DOJ's official response was, well, we had proven that there was a conspiracy to defraud the government. Well, we had proven that there was crimes committed and we had proven that there were racketeering evidence. What we had not established was intent.
Well,
okay. So the crime was done. We just didn't get into the mommy issues of the criminals.
Right.
And because we didn't get into the mommy issues of the criminals, the case didn't move forward. Now, it turns out that at that time, the senior advisor to then the president, back in 2001 and 2002, was actually one of the lead perpetrators of the crime, a former executive from Microsoft. I'm not saying that there was a cause and effect of that, but I am saying that it stinks to high heavens that one of the president's closest advisors happened to be one of the criminals. And the fact that there was a decision not to prosecute the crime may have had something to do with the fact that the person who would have been prosecuted was a person sitting next to the president in a lot of pictures. So the issue is this idea. And by the way, Stu, the rest of the world doesn't get this, right? If you and I committed a crime, guess what we wouldn't get to do? We wouldn't get to appeal to the, it's not that big of a crime, because you and I would actually have to face the music. But when you commit a big enough crime and it's egregious enough that the public institutions that are supposed to prosecute those crimes are in fact themselves co-opted, what then you have is a world in which crime can run unchecked, which is exactly what is happening right now. There is no question that the assertions I've made on antitrust felony violations are in fact evidence, clear, no discretion required, compelling arguments, because they meet the definition, right? When Anthony Fauci said Moderna is going to be a front runner in manufacturing a vaccine in the spring of 2020. That statement had no basis in fact. Moderna had never produced a successful vaccine before. They had never produced anything that was safely administered to humans before. And suddenly they are the front runner because Anthony Fauci says so. You dial that one back and say, well, guess what? The reason why he said so is because back in November of 2019, and you heard me right, a month before there was ever a pathogen to talk about.
Unbelievable.
He actually was getting the spike protein transferred from UNC Chapel Hill to Moderna. And by the way, that sounds like a pretty reckless accusation, except for the tiny problem of I actually have Ralph Barrick's email right here.
Can't see it because of your green screen there, but
well, there you go. I'll just hold it right there.
This is making you disappear there. Yeah,
right here.
Yep. Okay.
I unfortunately have the response that Ralph Barrick sent to a major media outlet that states very clearly that he was in fact sending samples in November to Moderna.
And what was that response?
November of 2019, a month before there was any SARS coronavirus.
And what was the response of the mainstream media?
You've seen that paper. You've seen the headline. You've seen the CNN report. Yeah. There's been no response. And the article that was supposed to be published several weeks ago, according to the editor who corresponds with me, was submitted for review and has still not been published. Now, why would you sit on evidence of that?
Well, because you're scared for your life. You're scared for your job. You're scared for your livelihood, your kids. I mean,
yeah, but Stu, you and I are having this conversation because we actually have life. And we have liberty and we have the pursuit of happiness that we value. And we're having this conversation because it would not be worth our lives if we sat on information that allowed for the genocide of our fellow human beings.
That's right.
We wouldn't do it.
But I'm not owned by one of these major corporations.
There you go.
That is a piece of the whole puzzle. And every single one of the major broadcast and cable news networks are very much so. And so when you look at somebody like Tucker Carlson, and he seems to be asking the right questions. Well, he's asking what he's allowed to, and I think that he's pushing the needle.
But he's not closing. You know, he reminds me in part of Rand Paul, when Rand Paul had Anthony Fauci in front of him.
Yep.
And the fact of the matter is, Anthony Fauci lied in Congress, which is a violation of the law, just to be clear. I mean, lying to Congress is, in fact, illegal. When he lied about the gain-of-function research at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, Rand Paul has in his own public records, because I know, because I've actually published these public records and delivered them to Rand Paul's office, I know that he had the ability to deliver the knockout blow, because the knockout blow was, Dr. Fauci, you just said you didn't fund gain-of-function research, so why is it that the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, received a letter from NIH saying that there was a moratorium on the gain-of-function research that you just said you weren't funding? Because I have that letter. I have the letter UNC Chapel Hill got. And I know that it came from NIH and NIAID. So how is it possible, Dr. Fauci, that you can actually tell me that you weren't funding gain-of-function research when your own letterhead says that you were? And why was it that Rand Paul did not deliver that knockout blow when he had Anthony Fauci witness in front of him capable of delivering that blow? My problem is that even the people who are allegedly pushing the needle are not delivering the punch.
Let's get to the motivations of somebody like Rand Paul.
Yeah.
Can you speculate? Why didn't he?
I don't have to speculate. I can see exactly what he did on every one of his social media platforms. He turned it into a soundbite for a fundraising campaign for his reelection. Go on any social media, and what do you see? Rand Paul put Anthony Fauci on the ropes, blah, 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 blah. You know, fire Anthony Fauci. And what does the link take you to? Donate to my reelection campaign.
The same thing is going on with every one of these so-called America First powerhouse patriot fighters, who I have been incessantly calling out for weeks now. I mean, we have 530 people in jail from a selfie party on the 6th of January at the invite of the President of the United States, ushered into the Capitol building by people posing as police officers, at least dressed as them. So these people are fundraising. That's what they're doing. They're just raising money. They're
That's
grifters.
Exactly what it is. And Rand Paul has not yet. And by the way, I mean, with the exception of this beautiful letter that went out on June the 11th from Ron Johnson, which is the June the 11th request for information from the Secretary of Health and Human Services and Francis Collins at NIH, with the exception of Ron Johnson's letter, which actually came as a direct response to information that my wife and I provided to Ron Johnson in a private meeting at the United States Senate office building. You know, an enormous amount of information that is in that letter has actually been requested for public disclosure. And this is coming from the Senate Committee on Homeland Security and Government Affairs. That's not a slouch committee. Homeland Security is kind of an important place,
I would say.
And while they ask for information regarding communication and regarding funding and regarding a number of other things, what they do is stop short, again, of actually getting to the crime. Because the crime includes information about the actual collusion that took place between Moderna, Pfizer, NIAID, CDC, and NIH. And, you know, and obviously their henchmen like UNC Chapel Hill.
So it's okay. So let me just, I want to summarize kind of what we have said to this point.
Yep.
The crime is being committed right out in the wide open. Yep. All of the law enforcement agencies that could do something about it are compromised and have been ordered not to do something about it. Yep. The judiciary is acting with this in the same way that they acted with massive, obvious election fraud in 2020. They're just refusing to hear it altogether. The elected representatives who you say are supposed to be, or who we think, or who they say are supposed to be out here acting on behalf of their constituents, are in fact just out here grifting and raising money. They know exactly what's going on, but refuse to say something. The media, we know about them. They're compromised and owned by these globalists, leaving only we, the people, to do anything about this.
Well, and the only person who I will provide just air cover enough, because I actually have appreciated my interactions with him, is Ron Johnson. I think Ron has tried to understand the issues. That he has done enough, I am never going to suggest, but that he has at least tried to inform himself. I'm going to go out and say, of all the people I've interacted with, he is probably the furthest down the road of actually standing with the people. So I want to acknowledge the little wins when they exist.
Sure. But people like Gates hosting these parties and Marjorie Taylor Greene, go, rah, rah.
No.
They're not doing jack about any of this.
They're not. And they're actually sitting on their hands and sitting on the evidence and making it abundantly clear that they have a public platform they are not using. And I remind people all the time of the fact that in 1774, most people, 1774, you mean 1776, right? No. 1774. It took about 13 people to actually realize that we as a people had to take action, because people in leadership were incapable of acting. And they are incapable of acting, Stu, because they're beholden to fundraisers. If you are sold, you cannot buy your soul back. You can't. No matter what you do, no matter how you do it, you are in fact always at the behest of whoever your benefactor was. And the fact of the matter is that we now have a public system that has absolutely failed the public.
Globally.
Absolutely.
The world is being subjected, these are David Martin's words, the world is being subjected to a bioweapon that has already killed thousands and will likely impact the morbidity of hundreds of millions. This is organized crime, and here we are debating masks.
Right.
I'm up against a hard break. You know how this thing goes. I have 1 hour and we've used it. I'm so glad that we used the whole thing. I admire your bravery, and I don't know what it's going to take. We never really did get there to what it's going to take.
Well, Stu, it takes this. It takes us standing together and making sure that the public record is filled with the fact that we were not silent.
We'll be on the right side of history. There's no doubt. And, you know, holding these people's feet to the fire. I'm so tired of these 3-minute media quick hit soundbite propaganda delivery segments that are happening with these people that I mentioned. Jim Jordan, Marjorie Taylor Greene. Oh yeah, they're such fighters. No, they're not. They're actively participating in a cover-up that is going to kill millions, hundreds of millions, potentially billions of people on this planet. They're actively participating in the cover-up. They are equally as complicit, and if and when anybody is ever held responsible for any of this criminally, they should be included. Dr. David Martin, where can people find you online?
DavidMartin.world, and as always, on all the social media platforms for a reason that we'll talk about on a different show.
And are you making a commitment to come back for that next show?
We'll have a great conversation about this. There's going to be that wonderful victory lap that we're going to do, Stu, because we are on the right side of history.
I agree. I agree 100%. God bless you, Dr. David Martin. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us on Let's Face the Issues today. I pray that the pre-recorded interview that we've had with Dr. David Martin has been a challenge to you. I pray that you were able to take notes. And if you would like to go to his website, it will be something that I think would be wonderful. It's davidemartin.world. davidemartin.world. Look him up. And I pray that you'll continue to join Let's Face the Issues each day. Looking forward to meeting you next time on the air as once again we face the issues.
have been listening to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood, pastor of First Conservative Baptist Church and president of Conservative Theological University, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida, located 1/2 mile south of I-295. FCBC invites you to tune in nightly, 9 to 9:45 p.m., for expository preaching on 91.3, 91.7, and 91.9 FM. You are invited to worship with them, 9:30 a.m. Sunday for Bible study, 10:45 a.m. Sunday morning worship service, 7 p.m. evening worship service, or 7 p.m. Wednesday fellowship meal Bible study. Prayer, Bible Q&A, and updates on issues facing our city, state, and country. Tune in again for another Let's Face the Issues broadcast. Also tune in the same station Saturday mornings at 9 for expository Bible preaching by Dr. Youngblood. Remember, a rebroadcast of this program can be heard in its entirety 9 p.m. on 100.3 FM and 93.3 HD3. You're also invited to tune in Sunday mornings at 8 a.m. on Talk 100.3 for expository preaching. Tune in and invite others to listen.